Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the latest Coleman Had a Dream podcast. We have a very special episode for you today. As always, I am joined by Ruth. How are you doing, Ruth?
Good, good. Thank you. It's very early on a Wednesday morning here, but looking forward to this.
Absolutely. We us too. We are joined by the voice of Welsh football. Thank you very much for joining us, Mr. Rob Phillips.
Well, thank you very much for that introduction. Truly honoured. Truly honoured.
Thank you. Thank you very much for joining us. I think we've all of a sudden, you know, we were always going to have a lot to talk about with the Nations League draw, but the Aaron Ramsey news has really added to our repertoire of things to discuss for today, really.
It's bad news for club and country. What is it, a month to the day when Wales play Finland in the playoff semi-final? And I mean, last year I saw him play actually as a substitute at West Brom, and he made one heck of a difference when he came on. Then they were going to start him last Saturday, but it didn't happen. They said it was a knock and then a calf problem. And then last night, I've got to say, Errol Bullitt, the Cardiff manager, looked really devastated by the news that he's going to be out for a month. In fact, he went into the press conference afterwards, because we do a separate radio hit, and mentioned 4 to 6 weeks. I think it's in between. I think, as I understand it, it's going to take 4 weeks and then maybe 10 days to get fit. So I can see where the 4 to 6 weeks comes from. We're all really guessing. And I suppose we shouldn't be surprised, but it is worse than anything. It's the player. It's Aaron Ramsey himself, yeah. Because I had a very short conversation with him on the pitch side at Watford when he finished his warm down after the game. He hadn't got on at Watford a couple of weeks ago, and he came off and said what a big couple of months were coming up, and he was clearly looking forward to the Wales games in March. He takes his responsibilities really seriously as Wales captain. And it's just gone from him now. Let's hope Wales can cope without him, as they to be fair, as they have done since, September.
I think that's the thing, we've had to kind of cope without him, unfortunately, in the last few months. But we will get on to Aaron Ramsey properly in a moment. We want to talk about yourself a little bit, Rob, the Nations League, the women's game that's coming up, and then this kind of general Welsh football stuff. I want to just do a little bit of housekeeping to start us off. I want to say thank you to everyone who supported us at buymeacoffee.com/ColemanStream. We had some money donated to us from Manon Keredwin James. I'm almost certainly said the middle part of your name wrong, and I'm so sorry. Also, thank you very much to Bagsy for supporting us. You can go to bagsybags.com and use the code CHAD10 for 10% off. In doing so, you can help support us. A little bit of that sale goes to us, and that helps keep this podcast running free of charge. Rob, I've got to ask you one question really selfishly first. I that when we qualified for Euro 2016, the Together Stronger song that came out, the line at the start of that, I remember hearing it at the time, and then obviously it's the line that's used in the first part of that song. Chris Coleman has freed Welsh football from the shackles of its history, gets the hairs on the back of my neck up every time. I just wondered where you get these kind of things from, because that's a genuinely poetic line to come out with. Was that kind of instinctive at the time, or do you have a few things pre-planned?
Pre-planned is probably strong, a bit strong. I must admit, for that occasion, it was going to be so momentous that I'd not scripted anything particularly, but I just jotted down rough notes. Where that came from, I don't know. But it was such an occasion, even though Wales had lost, you know, to get the news through that Wales had qualified. And I keep thinking about all the people who went before me who hadn't seen this. And it was my shout on them qualifying. And it was just one of the best moments of my sort of sporting life, to be honest, my journalistic career. And actually, to follow up on that, as you probably know, as you said, it was part of the song by the Manic Street Preachers. Yeah. I mean, you think qualifying in Zenica is odd. you want to try getting a phone call from a record company saying, Mr. Phillips, do you mind if we use your commentary from the Bosnia game when Wales qualified on a Manic Street Preachers song? Well, it took me all of 0.5 seconds to say yes. And then I realized, of course, I wasn't going to get paid. But I did meet the Manics then at the FAW dinner when they performed at the Vale. And great guys. And honestly, it was just everything. A bit like Welsh football, really. Everything has happened since then. I've been so privileged to cover. Wales has always been my biggest thing, no matter what. When I was on newspapers, it was the Echo, the Argus, or before that, Pontypridd Observer and Ron the Leader series. And Wales has always been the big thing for me. And you can imagine when I was on the Echo, covering Cardiff City, and going from Division 4 to suddenly sitting around players like Neville Southall and Kevin Ratcliffe. So it's always been special. But since 2014, since that night in Andorra, I've seen loads of the disappointments. And that's what went through my mind. All the disappointments. You know, I've been there. I was there for, I'm so old. I was there for Romania. I was there as a fan against Scotland. I remember watching Joe Jordan on TV at Anfield. All those disappointments. Mark Hughes, you know, Euro 20, was it 2004?
Russia.
And then suddenly it's all happened since. And I think, unless you're of a certain age, you really don't appreciate just how well Welsh football has done since about a twice taken free kick in Andorra.
Yeah, I think you and I are of a certain age, Rob. And I think that sort of timeline you were describing has, I have a lot of kinship with that. And I think every now and then it doesn't hurt for us to have a sort of little slap in the face and just a reminder of what the journey's been and how much joy it's brought, because those folks that have suffered through that long, long list of maybes. I mean, you can put Iceland on the list as well. You know, there's a whole
yeah,
load.
Yeah, I was there for that in the crowd for that as well.
Yeah, there's a whole load of them that are just painful.
Yugoslavia 76, I remember Mitching, as we say where I come from, Shakespeare afternoon to be picked up by my dad to get to Ninian Park to watch Rudy Glockner spoil the whole party. I mean, it just, they live with you, don't they? And I've got to say, one of the best moments in Zenica not only was qualifying, but the way it works after a game is that Chris Coleman will do a press conference, then maybe walk out to do some TV. And he came through this door, and I was with a camera and cameraman, and he came up to me and gave me a massive hug, and he said, "That's for people like you, seen us when we were rubbish," but he didn't use that phrase, rubbish. He was a bit stronger than that, and I was really, really touched by that. And so I'm sure he was thinking the same as well, because he's lived through a lot of the disappointments. But yeah, just a magical night, and it's been a magical journey since then, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it really, really has. Anini Pan, I've probably said her name wrong as well, has asked on that subject, what is the greatest moment you've commentated on in your career as club or an international journalist? I'd imagine the Zenica one comes close.
The Zenica one is right there. I probably have to say, because it gets played a lot, the Sam Vokes goal to finish off Belgium at Euro 2016. The greatest moment in 2016, I think, I always say this, was before the first game in Bordeaux, and we were singing the anthem, and I looked around and I was just thinking, I could not have dreamt of 30,000 Wales fans on foreign territory belting out Hen Lab and Haddai the way they did. It was just a privilege to be there. It was just the best moment of the Euros. I mean, the semi-final was brilliant. It was actually on my birthday as well, which is something. And yeah, I've had loads. I've been really lucky. I've been really lucky. Club and country, I've had some great moments, you know, covering Cardiff and Swansea and Wrexham and Newport as well. So yeah, I count my blessings every day. I really do. I know sometimes people think, oh, you know, it's It's more than just a job. That's the point. It's more, and it has to be,
Yeah.
Because of what's involved.
Do you find
You
it hard?
mentioned,
Sorry, go on, Riv.
You mentioned, Rob, a little bit of your sort of journalistic history when we were started to chat, and your dad as well, in terms of taking you to games and things. Is your kind of background in football, is it what I might think of as very stereotypical for our generation, where we were pulled there by our fathers and down the local club? And
Yeah, my dad was born in Newport, and then we moved up to Pontypridd when I was young. And he worked in a Burton's the Tailors for a long time. He was manager of the shop there. So getting out to matches on a Saturday was awkward. But we were born in Newport. We used to go and watch Newport County at Somerton Park. John Aldridge, Tommy Tyne, and all those sort of players. Tony Buck before that, those sort of John Relish, who became, you know, is a friend of mine now. And then I sort of got into newspapers, and I started up football columns on the Rhondda Leader. So I was covering Blaen Rhondda, Tom Pendra, Ferndale. Brilliant trips. I mean, they were just great, because they were just, I'm still friendly with the people now. People like Ronnie Dobbs, who used to be at Blaen Rhondda. Blaen Rhondda now sadly gone, and that caused me great sadness. Then I moved down to Plymouth for a while on the Western Morning News. Back to Newport on the Argus, ended up covering Newport County, which was always my ambition when I was a child, to write on Newport County. Then moved to the Echo, when I could see Newport were going up, and there was a job came up, 10 years covering Cardiff, and then 20-odd years on the Beeb. So it's been a progression, but it's football's been at the heart of it, because almost since the day I qualified after 2.5 years doing general reporting, I moved on to sport, and I haven't got off it since.
And but there's quite a change from written journalism to commentating, Rob. How did that evolve?
Basically, they wanted more newsy stuff on the Beeb. Things were changing then. Arthur Emmer was the head of sport then, and he wanted more sort of news-orientated people to be involved. And he got me involved, and a guy called Graham Thomas on the rugby side came from the Echo as well. And the commentary thing was just something I wanted to do. And I had to be really patient, and I had to learn my trade. I learned a lot from people like Ian Gwynn-Hughes, John Hardy, Oliver Hydes, those sort of people. Hugh Llewellyn Davis on the rugby, just a brilliant commentator to listen to. But I had to wait for my time, but I was pushing, yeah, I want to commentate, I want to commentate. And then it all happened from then. And it just seems that since I was made football correspondent, I think it was 2013, it's taken off for so many for clubs and country. So I've been, keep saying it, I have been really lucky.
Rob, do you find it hard with some of these things? Like, you're talking about things that you're passionate about there, covering Newport and Cardiff and Wales. Do you find it hard to keep your emotions in check at times? Because as a football fan, I mean, Ruth will tell you, I am one of the worst people to watch football with on the planet. I'm an absolute menace. But I would find it impossible to kind of control myself, especially when you're that invested in it emotionally as well.
Yeah, well, emotion is all part of it. I tend to think, if I'm not enjoying it, why should the listener? Now, some games are not there to be enjoyed. You're there to criticise. You have to be a critical friend, I think. That's how I'd look at it. Some would say, I remember one colleague saying to me, only the dogs heard you commentate then, because I was going so high pitch. I think it was a Rob Earnshaw hat trick at someone like Tranmere, something like that. So I've tried to tone it down, but clearly I fail big time if you listen to the folks' commentary and one or two others. It is quite, it can be emotional, but then, you know, you're there in a position where the fans get emotional. Football's an emotional game. That's why we love it. We love, you know, we love it, we hate it, but we love it really. And that's what I think every fan thinks. And you can't lose sight of the fact that you are being paid to be where hundreds, thousands would love to be. And you're getting into places for nothing to witness events. And certainly nothing illustrates that more now than Welsh football games, because games at the Cardiff City Stadium these days are not just matches. They are events. They are occasions of not just sport, but passion and culture and everything else. And I think that's what that has certainly helped drive me as well. I think it's been brilliant. And yeah, the emotion is all part of it. And you try, I always say I commentate with a Welsh accent. So in other words, you know, I get paid the same whether Cardiff, Swansea, Newport or Wrexham win or Wales win. But I'm coming at it from not their point of view, but with a Welsh emphasis.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's I like to think I'm not biased when I'm commentating. So, you know, I've been called a Newport fan. Newport fans say I like Wrexham. I think that's a bit of a take a mickey out of me because I go there. I've been called a Bluebird quite often because I cover them for so long.
Yeah.
And I was even called a Jack on a phone in a couple of derbies ago. So I think if they're all having a go at me for being a fan of another club, I must be doing okay.
with the phone in stuff, how do you find that? Because is there ever a game or a thing that comes up? One of our regular writers, Stephen Baker, asked this: is there something happens in a game, or you've seen something or heard a comment that someone's made, and think to yourself, "God, the phone in's going to be a nightmare now," or "This is going to be an amazing phone in"? Do you kind of preempt what you think it might happen?
Yeah, well, luckily there wasn't a phone in after the Newport Manchester United game where I got the crowd chant mixed up. Hashtag Anthony the greatest. So, to be fair, that might have generated a few calls. It certainly went viral. I have to say that. But hey, you know, you take it because you're out there, and that's what it happens sometimes. I suppose I could remember quite a few years ago. There was one Christmas where I wasn't doing the game, but I was doing the phone in. And I remember saying to someone, I think it was Cardiff, I say, if Cardiff get hammered here, the phone-in's going to be a whiz. Because you know, if teams get beaten, it's a horrible thing to say. But, you know, you either want teams to win well or lose badly to get a phone-in going.
Yeah.
Because it's the extremes that generate the calls. You know, a goalless draw at home to, well, I might have had a few calls after Blackburn, I suppose. Goalless draw there, given the atmosphere at Cardiff at the moment.
Yeah.
But, you know, you tend to know, and often as well, it's beyond just the football. It could be an incident in a game, or it could be the owners, which is increasingly part of the phone-in thing now. And, yeah, you can usually tell when it's going to be quiet, but actually we don't get many quiet ones these days.
Yeah.
I have to say that.
Ruth, do you want to jump in here?
Yeah, I was just going to ask, how do you keep, just from a sort of mechanics point of view, Rob, how do you keep a tempo and a calmness to those phone-ins when people can be, like you say, so passionate? Inevitably, people are passionate about what they're phoning in about.
Yeah, I mean, as long as they don't swear, I'm okay with that. Yeah, a tempo, I tend to say, and not all producers agree with this, I tend to say, look, if they're ringing in, it doesn't matter what they're going to talk about, let's get them on air. You have to be able to cope with criticism. You know, there was a Wrexham fan on actually last weekend saying, keep Kevin Ratcliffe away from Wrexham games. We always lose when Kevin is there. Now, Kevin has done a load of games this season. They can't be doing that bad because Wrexham are vying for promotion. So they can't be suffering that much when Kevin Ratcliffe watches them. But you get where it comes from, former Chester manager, etc., and Shrewsbury manager. So, yeah, I think, and I'm lucky we've got some really good pundits as well who are not afraid to say what they think. And again, that generates calls and interest. So, yeah, it works well, and the social media is increasingly part of it now. I used to think if we don't get calls, we must be doing something wrong. But these days, a producer said to me a few years ago, it's not all about calls. It's about traction on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, and the text and the WhatsApp. So it's sort of encompasses all now.
I've got one more question for you before I want to move on to the Nations League stuff. We got a question from a guy called Mike Pierce Owen, who asked, "What is the coldest game you've ever commentated on, and did the conditions have an effect on your commentary?"
Coldest game. Well, there was a memorable occasion when I had Mickey Thomas with me at Oldham, with Swansea in the FA Cup, I think it was. And Mickey made headlines by saying he was effing freezing on air, thinking that thinking it was the end of, it was the final whistle. I think John Hollins had been under pressure, but I said something like, "Oh, it's a defeat for Swansea, but I think they played well enough. I think Hollins is safe." Words along that line, and we haven't been able to get a summarise until the Friday. And Ollie Hyde had rung Mickey to come on to help summarise, and he turned up in a shell suit. I'll never forget. And I said to him before the game, I said, "Mickey, this is Boundary Park. You're going to be really cold here." And he said, "Oh, I'll be fine. I'll be fine." Well, of course, by the end, he was shivering. And so I say, "Swansea lost, but not the worst performance. It's finished, whatever the score was." Ollie picks up and then says something like, "Well, I know someone who'd make a great manager of Swansea City." Was he directed at Mickey? Mickey, not realizing we were still live, says, "Ollie, I am effing freezing." So Ollie quickly pulls away from where we were. Bill Blanche of the Press Association, he was down in the Western Mail. I could see his head hit the desk next to Mickey. He was the other side of him. And I turned to Mickey. I said, "Mickey, you've just said the F word on air." And he went, no, he said, "I'm on MUTV tonight. There's a 7 second delay." I said, "No, Mickey, that went out live." So Ollie picks up and says, "Let's quickly go to Steve James at the racecourse." And Steve picks up and says, "Well, you'll be glad to hear, Ollie. I'm quite comfortable at the racecourse." So the way it works then is that you write your match report while they're talking, rounding up the other games, ready for just after five. About 2 minutes later, the producer comes on to me down the line. "Have you written your match report?" And I turned to him and said, "Have you resigned yet?" And he said, "It's not funny. We've already had calls."
Oh dear.
So I haven't been in that position, but it's a point I make to all the pundits. Wear layers because you cannot, and this is physically correct, you cannot talk when you're cold.
Yeah.
And that's what we're there for. A good question, though.
There you go. I got that came up on Facebook. I was happy with that. Oh, good one. Obviously, we've had the Nations League draw recently. Wales drew Iceland, Montenegro, and Turkey. We want to have a look through that. There's some cracking trips in there. But Ruth, I'll start with you. How are you feeling about that draw?
Yeah, we discussed on the last podcast kind of how we imagined this would go. Wanted to avoid Turkey. I think they're, as they demonstrated in our last qualifying group, they're a team that seem to be on the up. I do also think they are still a bit susceptible. I think it's interesting that these games will be in the fall after the Euros, and it will be interesting to see how they've done, because I think they can be a little seesaw-ish in their performance. So if they have the sort of Euros that they had last time around, which was a bit of a disappointment, maybe they won't be so kind of together as they've been, that we've seen them recently. But they're obviously the class, I think, that we're up against. Iceland are clearly waning compared to their height. Montenegro, it's not a, we never do great on those long Eastern European trips. I know it's not that far by some standards, but I think all in all, I think it's as good a B group as we could have expected. I would still rather have avoided the Turks, but that's what it is.
I agree. I think the Turkey is an interesting one. They're still a bit in transition, I think, looking at their recent squads and their stronger players are still very much the younger players that are in their lineup. They've got Güler, obviously, who's at Real Madrid, and they've got a guy called Yildiz. Again, I'm sure I said his name wrong. Who's a young lad who's playing for Juventus as well. So I also wonder if they might see this as a chance to kind of blood some of those younger players and get some of those players in. But they're obviously the tough match that we'll face, especially away. What was your thoughts on the draw, Rob?
I thought it could have been a lot worse, I have to say. I certainly don't think you'd call it a group of death or anything like that. I must say, I was quite impressed with the way Vincenzo Montella has got Turkey playing when they played Wales in October. Oh, sorry, in was it? No, November, wasn't it? In and I actually remember in Samsun, I sort of do my prep on players, and I saw this kid Arda Güler is the next Turkish superstar, and I mentioned that as he ran on as a sub, and he scored a worldie. So I felt vindicated in my research then. But I think, you know, Iceland are almost showing how well we are doing. That from their yes, they qualified for the next World Cup, didn't they, after 2016. But they have slumped to what, 73rd in the world. I know people often dismiss the FIFA rankings, but I think they give you a decent guide on where you are. I've always held that. Even when Bobby Gould slaughtered the rankings, I never bought that. I think they give you a decent indication. And Montenegro, I've got to say, Podgorica is one of the nicest places I've been to watching Wales. So I'm quite happy about Podgorica. Heart of hearts, I would have liked Kazakhstan because I've never been there. One of the three countries Wales haven't played in the UEFA Association. So, but hey, that's not going to happen. Yeah, I think it could have been a lot worse, definitely.
I've got to say, I was delighted with Kazakhstan not being our team because I was never going to be able to go there. So I was, and I've always fancied Podgorica, so I was
Oh, it is
absolutely
lovely.
delighted.
Yeah, it is lovely.
Yeah, we're gonna plan on doing that one. We're also gonna go to Iceland. I've not been to Iceland before, so I'm looking forward to that. As you say, Rob, they definitely seem to be on the downward slope of their peak. They've dropped down, as you say, to 73rd in the world. They're also going through a big transition. Looking at their recent squads again, there were only two players in their last squad who had more than 20 caps. I was also fascinated to see that Gylfi Sigurdsson played in their two games in January. That they played two friendlies against Honduras and someone else. I forget who now. But he played for a side. He's played for a side. Seen a deal with a team called Lyngby, and he has come back and played for them. So I was really interested to see. I don't know. He's injured, so they've terminated his contract. But they said, well, there's an option to pick it back up again, depending on how his injury recovery goes. So he might be back in the mix by the time we play. I'm not entirely sure, but a fascinating side story that one.
Yeah, and they've got the Norwegian government, Hareide, took over in Aga, is it his first name? Aga Hareide took over in April, didn't they? So I don't think Iceland should be any fear to us, if I'm honest. And I mean, when I think of Iceland, I just think of that ridiculous Gareth Bale goal the last time we played them, actually, at the Cardiff City Stadium. And if you remember, he scored a similar goal for Real Madrid in, I think it was a Copa del Rey final,
Yeah,
and everybody
against
raved
Barca.
about it, but he'd given us the preview
Yeah.
well before that, running off the field, running back on again, and scoring the worldie. Thank
Absolutely
you, Gareth.
ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous, man.
Yeah.
Ruth, looking at in Montenegro, they're a bit of an inconsistent side, I'd say, really. They came third in their last qualifying group behind Hungary and Serbia. Only won three games, I think it was, in their group, but a lot of draws, just kind of a hit and miss side in a lot of ways. But they do have Jovetic up front for them, who's their top scorer, who used to play for Man City. He plays for Olympiakos now. And they've got Stefan Savic, who plays for Atletico Madrid at the back, who's also a key player for them. So I think whilst Iceland, I think the team we're there to get at, I think Montenegro is going to be quite a tricky game, actually.
Yeah, I think they remind me of maybe where we were kind of 12, 15 years ago, where we have kind of a few players that can hold it together and we could pull out a few odds and ends of results, but not have any consistency. And the way we have been historically, we can trip up on those sorts of games horribly sometimes. I think navigating those sorts of games where the opposition can dig in. I mean, we saw it with Latvia recently, for example, where the opposition can dig in and just make it incredibly difficult for us. I think we do have to find better ways of overcoming those sorts of hurdles.
Yeah, I think you and I have talked about that a lot, Ruth, haven't we? Looking for that sort of plan B if someone really digs in against us, and I think now is a good chance to go at that, not just in terms of our tactics, but maybe even personnel. Ruth, what do you think success looks like in this? I mean, are we looking at wanting to get promoted? Is not going down but blooding younger players the best thing we can do here? Like, how do we view these games?
I think next autumn could be quite a major reset time for us, couldn't it? I mean, we're going to talk a bit more about the Ramsey situation, but there are a few players where a few positions perhaps where we need to be looking at blooding in some new players. The arrangements in the group are quite interesting because even if you're second, you go into a sort of wild playoff with the potential of being promoted, and if you're third, you go into a sort of relegation playoff with the potential of being demoted. So it's all a bit unpredictable in terms of what your outcome's going to be, even based on the league. I mean, one would imagine it's between us and Turkey for the top spot. I don't think that's an unreasonable assumption. But I can see some merit perhaps in not being promoted to A and using the Nations League the way we've been able to, more as a sort of bedding and performance related sort of framework. I like the fact that this is quite contained as a win, it's literally all within those autumn international windows. So it's a sort of almost like a little mini tournament in itself, isn't it, across the three weekends. So I think by the autumn we're going to be needing this more as a building a building phase, I
Yeah,
think,
I'm not
actually.
sure the fans take that though. They've become
No.
so used to success that it's one of the defenses I use about Rob Page that I think he's pretty good at blooding youngsters. So you look at I know we're not onto Ramsey yet, but Wales have coped without Ramsey because Ethan Ambadu suddenly coming up to 50 caps and he's only 12 or whatever he is. And Jordan James has dovetailed really well with him. Now that was sort of forced upon Wales, but it's worked. I agree there are one or two positions where they will have to blood others. But I think I was quite encouraged by the performance against Gibraltar. People like Charlie Savage, I thought, I thought Liam Cullen did okay as well. So I still think that Wales fans, particularly the younger ones, expect to finish top or second in the group. And I don't see any reason why Wales can't do okay in this group.
I think I would be disappointed if we were below second in this
Yeah.
group. But I think our needs from it might be different the last time we were in B, where we were really pushing to try and get the top spot and into the A league. I think this may be a bit more of a regroup.
I think that's the thing we were talking at the start there about generations of Wales fans, and there's whilst in the nicest possible way, I don't think I'm quite in your generation, chaps, but still went through enough shitty times in my Wales supporting career to enjoy the bits we have now. But yeah, I think you're right. There is also people who started following probably as around the 2014 time, where we had someone like Gareth Bale as a world-class player that our younger fans are used to or expecting people like him and Ramsey and still winning games, So I think that's where that line, that barrier, if you like, is altering some of the perspectives for a lot of our fans. And I do think that success is still bleeding into the old some a certain set of older fans who now we are kind of at the peak of our powers, possibly. That we should stay there and that's where we belong now. So it is a bit of a weird mix. But I think for me the time now for overriding performance is really important. I think you're right, Ruth. Regardless of everything, I still don't think we should be third or fourth in that group. But even if that were to happen, if it gives an opportunity for people like Savage and Cullen and Collins and Will Evans and some of these players maybe I think now is the time to do that when the pressure's off. I'd rather us be throwing these people in and have a bad couple of months, knowing that when we have qualifiers coming round the corner for the next World Cup, that those, you know, or even the actual Euros itself, that you know, there's positive stuff on the horizon. The qualifiers, sorry. There's positive stuff on the horizon, rather than, you know, can we chuck one or two players in here and there? I think now is a better chance to do that than the qualifiers. So obviously we've covered the Nations League there. The Nations League games for our women's team starting fairly soon. The draw for the next set of them is going to be on the 5th of March. In the meantime, Wales are playing the Republic of Ireland on the 27th of February. I thought it was an interesting squad announcement, mainly because there's five new faces in it, but also the mention of the three players joining from the under-17 squad that have been training together recently. Whilst they won't be involved in the match day, they'll obviously be part of training. I thought it was interesting as well that John Gray refused to rule himself out of the job running. He's obviously interested in it. And Rob, do you think that the new faces and the nod to the under-17s is also perhaps a bit of a job application from John at the same time, looking at to what he might try and bring to the squad and the group if he did get the job?
Yeah, possibly. And I also thought the his assistants being Helen Ward and James Robrey were interesting appointments as well. I don't know John Gray particularly well. But he certainly not ruled himself out. If I'm honest, my preference would always be for a woman to manage the Wales women's team, because I don't think women get enough chances at management. But I'm not, just like with the men's side, I've never been one to say it has to be a man, never been one to say it has to be Welsh, despite dalliances with other nationalities that hasn't always worked. So yeah, and I do think there was, if you know, I didn't cover the Wales women under Gemma Granger, but I went to a few games, saw them on TV. If I had criticism of Gemma Granger, it was that she was almost too loyal to some players in the squad, and you know that some of our pundits who know far more than me about it, Gwenan Harris and Kath Morgan and those sort of people, were saying, look, you've got to introduce new blood, you've got to get more youngsters in. Even you've got to make some subs earlier than you do to get fresh legs on the pitch as well. So it's going to be really interesting just what the FAW do, because as I said, John Gray has not ruled himself out. He's got a, I think, a pretty decent backroom staff there with him. So you could see that becoming permanent, but I wonder whether Noel Mooney, given the things he said about Rob Page and the men's setup over the last few years, whether he'd want someone a bit more high profile, I don't know.
Yeah,
I think we're guessing, aren't
I
we?
get the feeling Mooney likes his glitz a little bit more than he might admit at times. I can see your point. Actually, interestingly, Rob, I'm with you in that I'd rather it was a woman, but I don't. I'm not. It's not something I'm wedded to. I don't think it has to be.
No.
For the same practical reasons, I think that it says something if you have a coaching mechanism of the extent that we do in the FAW, and yet we can't generate a female coaches of the quality that we're looking for. I think there's a sort of disconnect there. I agree with what you were saying about the sort of the Gemma Granger's tenure. I think it's one of the few things, I think, Dave, that we've noticed with people that we communicate with, that where it's been pretty universal, people's opinion that there weren't the substitutes and there wasn't the embedding of the younger players going on. And I think that's been a very common theme in how people have reacted to how those games were going. And going back to what we were just discussing about the men's team, we've reaped rewards for being brave about putting some young players in and getting, as you said, you know, you used Ampadu as an example, Rob, of getting him up to 50 caps, barely noticing it happening, you know. And I think we'd be short-sighted if we don't have the leverage the same situation for the women And I think it was a pity that those last round of games weren't utilised more in that way.
Yeah, and
So,
likewise, a bit like Rob Page has had to cope with, Gareth Bale came to the end of his career that when he did, Jess Fishlock cannot go on forever. And, the chances are you would think, I mean, you never know with Jess, she's got her own mind and she's driven as much as she, had the privilege of commentating with her in Qatar. And I just know how driven she is about Wales and her country and representing her country as long as possible. But you wouldn't be surprised if this was her last campaign. And so, how do you replace Gareth Bale? How do you replace Jess Fishlock? I think it's the same question. So, they will have to come up with answers, and the youngsters may provide some of those answers.
I think for me, that's why getting this appointment is so right. It's so important that they get it so right now, because you're right, Jess is not going to go on forever. This is realistically going to be her last crack of the whip, I think. And I think that's also why John has tried to bring in, some of the players he's got here, Olivia Francis, Maisie Davis, both playing for Manchester United. I think that's a big part of it as well. They're giving these younger players who he thinks could be the next Jess Fishlock a path, if you like, into that team. I think Wales wants someone who's got some experience of being a manager. I think they want someone who's I think they want someone who's a woman, because I think, as Ruth says, I think it's really interesting that we have these pathways set up and there's all sorts of people, Thierry Henry and Mikel Arteta and whatever else are coming through on the men's side, but we need to be able to produce and kind of sustain ourselves from a coaching perspective as well on the women's side. So I think that's important, and I think that will come to pass. I think the big thing that we got with Gemma Granger is someone who's had a bit of experience at international level, albeit with a younger age group, and someone who had a certain and specific way of playing football. And I think that is the big thing that Wales will want to go for. I can see Helen Ward being part of it longer term. Lauren Dykes, who's done her coaching badges, we've talked about her before. She's someone I can see being part of the setup. But I think the main person there will probably be someone external and separate from our group. And I think part of their remit might be to encourage and to drive the coaching side, get more women involved in coaching, I think will be probably a big part of that role moving forward. To look at I don't want to spend too much time on the game in itself, because we've talked about it a little bit before, Ruth, and it is a friendly, but I wanted to reference the draw which is coming up, because the way that the playoffs and the League B system and everything else work here is kind of weird is the easiest way to describe it. How do you think it looks in terms of how it will help us or hinder us most likely
I have no
in terms of
idea.
qualifying?
I won't pretend I follow it. It's like comedy value complicated. I think, I mean, obviously being in League B had a major, there was a major sort of step backwards in terms of how accessible it makes qualifying. My understanding is that if you do well in B, which we're in, you've got a chance at a playoff place. And I think that's about the best that you can look at. So I think these things have to be looked at kind of separately. I don't think we can rely on what's happening in the Nations League to try and qualify things. I think that they're going to be more important for us building some momentum with a new coach necessarily than they are in trying to finagle a playoff place.
So from
Yeah,
what
what
I
they can't
understand,
lose, I think,
go on.
is what they
Go on.
cannot lose, afford to lose, is that feeling of, I felt it under Jane Ludlow, and it's a similar group now. They had, it was more than just playing for Wales, it was a cause. It was a cause to promote women's football. Now, that happens with results, you have to say. So it's going to be a tough call, particularly if some of the senior players start to drop out and end their careers. And I'm glad you didn't ask me about the qualifying, because I had a quick read through before I came on here, and I am absolutely befuddled. Now, it doesn't take a lot to confuse me, but I was totally lost with that. So
I mean, it is a mad system. I'll very briefly explain that basically, to all intents and purposes, it was so important for us to stay in League A, because if you get to League A, you're pretty much guaranteed, even if you get relegated from League A this time around, you're still guaranteed a playoff place, basically, for the finals. And the top two, I think, from the League A are guaranteed a place in the Euros. If we come first, second, or third in our group, basically don't get relegated from League B, we're also guaranteed a playoff place, but we can't qualify directly from League B. A playoff is the best we can do. These are the qualifiers, if you like, for the tournament itself. So they're doubling up the Nations League, and the qualifiers are in the same, they're the same event, basically. So there's also then, this is where I won't bore everyone to tears, but it does get split into seeds, and you can, if you win the group, you can get be a seeded team in the playoffs, which means you avoid the teams dropping down from League A. It is mad complicated, but to all intents and purposes, if we don't get relegated from League B, we will be in a playoff for the tournament itself. So that's the upside of it all, is that we're pretty much guaranteed a playoff for the tournament. But obviously, playoffs and Welsh football, with the exception of the World Cup, is not been a happy marriage over the years, especially with what happened to the women's team recently against Switzerland. So it's yeah, it's a very strange setup, I think.
Well, you've got one listener to this podcast now, because I'll be listening to that if I have to do anything on the women's football again, as you've explained in a way that I couldn't understand when I was reading it. Thank you, Ty.
There you go. If one person finds me useful, that is progression. So
Yep.
Yeah.
yeah, Ruth long gave up listening to me. Yeah, that draw is coming out on the 5th of March. We will look forward to that, and we will be covering that on a pod very soon. Good luck to the girls on the 27th in that game against the Republic of Ireland. Now, with the main body of our podcast, I guess, I say that we've been waffling for ages now, but is definitely to talk about the Aaron Ramsey situation. It's obviously bad news that he's going to be missing the game. A few people on Twitter talking about today, you know, is it actually that bad a piece of news, in the sense that it kind of makes up our mind about perhaps our tactical shape, or who plays, and were we shoehorning Ramsey in? Rob, just overall, what is your take on the situation? Because I certainly don't think there's a positive to it per se, but is there an upside in that it helps Rob Page make his tactical decision, and likely that means James and Johnson get to play in their preferred positions?
No, I don't think there is an upside to it like that. I'm a huge fan of Aaron Ramsey, have been since I saw him as a 16-year-old. I think he's been a terrific servant for Wales, and I hope this isn't, in fact, I don't think it will be the end of Aaron Ramsey playing for Wales, because if Wales qualify, he'll be on the plane to Germany, I'm sure. Errol Bullitt summed it up for me when he told me about Aaron Ramsey. I asked him how much of a blow it was for club and country, and he said any coach would want Aaron Ramsey in their squad. You cannot afford to be without quality players like him. I get the Rob Page as a selection headache to shoehorn him in, but my mind goes back to Latvia when he was head and shoulders the best player on the pitch
100%.
when Wales won in Latvia to set up what happened for the rest of the autumn. So he is still a vital player. And again, I get that. See, I've got this theory. I've always thought that Rob Page would like to play a false nine regularly, but he cannot do that because Kiefer Moore keeps scoring goals when he goes on. And so I think it's what, 12 goals in 38 caps now, is it, for Kiefer Moore? I think, you know, he's easily the top scorer over the last 2 3 years since so he would have found a way. What that way would have been, I don't know, but it was a headache he would have liked to have had, a real dilemma, but he would have loved that. And you have to remember as well, Wales get through the first game, there's another one 5 days later. It's possible that had Aaron Ramsey been fit, he might not have played a 90. So
Yeah,
those
true.
two games, Wales squad is going to be stretched anyway, because traditionally we're not brilliant on double headers. So with a 5 day gap, only 5 days, I think, yeah, it's a big blow to lose, if not your best player, one of your best players.
Yeah,
Yeah, I'll
I'm
go off
with
and go.
Rob. Sorry, I'm with Rob in that I'd always have rather have Ramsey in a squad than not, and I'd rather always have to make that choice than not. I think we're the sort of clarification now, a month, at least a month out, Paige knows what the situation is. I can see that there's some advantage in that. I can see that you're not trying to work out, can we get a half out of him? Can we get 90, 60 minutes out of him? I can see that that in itself has pluses, but I would still rather have him involved. I would still rather have the option of bringing him on for the last 25 minutes than not. But I think the one plus about what's happened that is that it's happened now and it's clear what the situation is going to be in a month. He's not going to be involved. And I think that's the one sort of plus about what's happened. I just you feel incredibly for the player. I mean, it's just his so much of his career has been two steps forward and one back. And it's just you just want to give him a crutch. It's just like it's he shouldn't have to be dealing with this. That's the feeling.
I
Yeah, I
agree.
couldn't agree more. And the point you've made there, Ruth, about the timing is probably the only actual upside. I agree entirely with what you said there, Rob, about the Latvia game. I think he only played 50 minutes in the end, but he was without doubt the best player on the pitch. The way he moved the ball, his eye for a pass, the way he can create space for other people and for himself. You're right. The difficulties of the squad decision aside, he has to be in the squad. He for me, has to be in our starting lineup if he's fit enough to be there because he's just so good. And he's, I think that the person who can unlock the door. I always think back to that goal we scored against Slovakia in 2016, where he kind of stumbles through, and he's that sort of player that even when he stumbles through and past people, it just kind of creates a bit of carnage in the interim. And obviously that led to Hal scoring that goal. But that was that kind of sums him up for me. That creative spark, that ability to unlock a door that I don't think anyone else in our squad has got. So
No,
it's a
I always
huge
used to
loss.
say when Bale was playing, Wales didn't have to play well to win because of Gareth Bale. But for Wales to play well, Aaron Ramsey had to play well. And I think that largely got us through, a generation really of Welsh football. But, Rob Page will have to find another way now, as you say, that at least there is certainty there.
I think he went under the radar to an extent through a lot of the Gareth Bale era because whilst Gareth Bale was scoring these ridiculous goals and doing all sorts of mad things, Ramsey, as you say, was always kind of paving the way and creating and was always a key axis, if you like, of that team. We're obviously talking about the playoffs. Rob, I've got to ask how you think we're going to get on in March.
I think I'm most like most Welsh football observers, I think we've got enough to get through both. I really do. I'm encouraged by the January window with the likes of Kiefer Moore now playing regularly. David Brooks getting a decent move. I know he was down a level, but he's playing now for Southampton. And scoring goals in the case of Moore and Broadhead. I mean, for once we've got players who are on form in front of goal, which is the key thing for Wales. Again, I look at Harry Wilson. Doesn't start every game for Fulham, but whenever I've seen Fulham play, he makes an impact, even if he comes on as sub. Brennan Johnson, I still don't think Wales have found a proper role for him yet. I still think there's room for more from Brennan Johnson in a Wales shirt. And you look at the way the boys at Leeds are playing; they're just smashing it at Leeds United. And they are, I mean, there's another interesting one: the way Ampadu and Rodon are playing together at centre back for Leeds. Does that give Rob Page something to think about? I suspect he would keep with James and Ampadu in midfield, but it's another option. So I'm relatively optimistic. But then there's a month to go yet, and who knows how many take to be Rob Page after the squad is announced when they're all playing because he just dreads a text or a phone call.
Yeah. Well, there you are. We very often get called a podcast of doom here, Rob. So I'm glad that you've got some positivity for us. I'll
Oh, no,
take
I
that.
hope I'm not the only one who's fairly confident.
I'm fairly confident. we'll get past Finland, and then after that, I'm not so sure about Poland. But you've been positive. No one needs me to bring this down. Let's try and be positive. Rob, you mentioned Leeds there. Ruth, I want to ask you that question about Rodden and Ampadu. Would you like to see them playing together there in a defensive role? Ampadu, especially for Wales, would you like to see him in midfield? And equally, whilst Conor Roberts has made that move now to Leeds, Wes Burns is in ridiculous form at the minute, assisting, scoring. Is Conor Roberts in danger of losing his place?
I think Paige won't stir that particular pot, is my feeling, ahead of the Finland game. I think, all things being equal, you'd move Rodden and Ampadu as a pair and put them in the defence. But we need Ampadu in defensive midfield much more than we need him pairing with Rodden. I think the relationship he's building with Jordan James, you don't want to disrupt that. And for kind of the same reason, I can see Conor Roberts being the right wing back, because I'm just not sure Paige is going to roll that dice. But the way Wes Burns is playing and the sort of partnership with Moore, I mean, I'm not sure you call it a partnership as such, but clearly they're on the same page playing for Ipswich at the minute. There are benefits that as an international manager, you can reap from people's combinations at clubs. And I don't think you can ignore that. I just can't see Paige doing that, making those changes.
Yeah, what do you think there, Rob, about the Conor Roberts thing? Because he's not really been in sparkling form. He's certainly not had too many great games in a Wales shirt of late. How do you see that going? Because I saw Wes Burns turn a pace the other day for that ball for Kiefer Moore, and just phenomenal, a great pass too. Do you think he's maybe more suited to coming on as an impact player, as an attacker, as rather than a defender, or do you think he is in contention for that spot?
I think I'm with Ruth. I don't think Rob Page would change Conor Roberts. I don't actually think Conor Roberts deserves to be dropped either. You say he hasn't been spectacular, but I think he's been okay. What I would say is that with the likes of Burns and Broadhead, I know it's championship level, but they are players who can now make an impact. We saw that in Croatia with Broadhead, of course, memorably so. And I think I was going to say a luxury, but that's an element that Wales have hardly had over years. You know, I mean, when Chris Coleman was there, we almost knew the 12 or 13 who were going to play and who might come on. Now it's a bit different. I mean, I'll throw in another one. I think Reuben Cole is playing better again. Does he come back into the squad, particularly now Ramsey is going to be missing? Because I think he could make an impact. So that's why I'm pretty upbeat about certainly the Finland game. I'm with you on Poland or Estonia. Who knows what could happen? And that's again where I make the point that, you know, let's say Wes Burns doesn't start against Finland, he might be needed to start against Poland or Estonia. So, you know, the more the merrier, I say.
Absolutely. I you mentioned Broadhead there. I think we went from about 6 weeks ago talking about if Moore doesn't play, what the hell are we going to do for goals? And now we're in this position where people have started racking them in left, right and centre. Broadhead's in great form. Obviously, Moore has got, I think he's got 4 goals now since he's gone to Ipswich. Will Evans, I appreciate in League Two, is scoring for fun. I wanted to ask you about him as a Newport player and obviously coming through the Welsh leagues, Rob. would you be tempted to give him a nod in the playoff games?
As much as I like Will Evans, no. We had the same debate with Paul Mullin at Wrexham last season. And I'll refer you to my good mate, Nathan Blake, who says there are levels. And, you know, in a year or so's time, if Will Evans gets a move, which I think he probably will in the summer, I would take a chance on him at championship level. I think he's been brilliant for Newport. And he gives you more than just goals. He's got the work rate that he gets in people's faces. He annoys centre-backs. He's as tough as teak, really. And he's got an engine on him, which is just ridiculous. And I don't know how good his milk is on his farm. He must drink something because he's supercharged. So he's got real endurance about him. But I wouldn't be, I don't think so. I think there are levels. And, I didn't think Paul Mullin I didn't think Paul Mullin should be in the Wales squad. I don't think Will Evans should at the moment while he's in League Two. Because, I said last season with Paul Mullin, if you're Aaron Collins, for instance, who was banging in the goals in League One, you think, well, what on earth have I done? So I he's a you just never know. My inclination is Rob Page doesn't do stuff like that normally. Paul
Ruth?
Mullin was going to get a cap. He probably would have been in the Gibraltar squad. He was only on
Yeah, true.
standby.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm with Rob on this. I think Will Evans may have a cap in the future, but it's
Yeah.
exactly the sort of path that Rob is describing of get a move in the summer and perhaps be playing for a middle-ish championship team who are looking to solidify their place and that sort of thing. And who knows, you never know when someone's going to end up with a cap in a friendly and or someone, extra coverage in a squad and that sort of thing. But I can't see him being involved in these games.
Well, the other thing is, you look at the resources Wales have up front. They've got Johnson, Moore, Dan James scoring goals for Leeds as well. Broadhead, Liam Cullen's getting goals at championship level. To me, he's Swansea's best finisher. I think he's got five goals as we speak. So we're not particularly short. Or in that area, there are other areas where Wales are short, but I don't think that is one. And so, you might say that Bradshaw's not exactly killing it for Millwall at the moment. So maybe there's a spot available there. But if you pick five or six forwards, you've probably got them in around the Championship and Premier League level.
I like to disagree with Ruth on a weekly basis. It's a shame I have to disagree with you as well now, Rob. But I tell you why I would give him a nod. It's because I do think he will go up the ladder in the future, and I do think that that move will come, be it this summer or further down the line. And I think ultimately, I do not want to argue with Nathan Blake. I'm glad he's not here, but I there are levels. That's absolutely right. But I also think you just can't argue with someone who keeps scoring goals, whatever level they're in, as long as they're playing professional football, obviously. I just think that he also offers something a bit different, that I'm not sure we possess with a lot of those other people we've talked about. Broadhead likes to play off someone. Johnson is the same. I think Evans offers a physical presence. He can run the channels, quite similar to how Kiefer Moore does, actually. But he has, he can score all sorts of goals. I'm not saying I'd start him. But I think there's no harm in having him in the squad and having a look at him. And I said the same about Mullin, to be fair. I think the big thing as well is when someone's in form and they have that sort of confidence, I think that confidence really can spread around people quite infectiously. And I think someone coming in, great story, having that lad around training, it'd be a great experience for him. For me, I don't see there's a downside in putting him in the squad myself. Whether he gets into the 23 and gets a game is maybe a different kettle of fish, but I personally would have him involved. But that is why I am talking on a podcast in my spare room, not managing at international football level. I do have one more question from Gareth Collins. This is a bit of a deeper question, but where do you see the national team go in the next 5 years? That's what Gareth has asked. I think I'm going to try and narrow it down because 5 years is very, very broad. But I think ultimately, I think the question also hinges around and how you think Rob Page has done in general, because I think now the dust has settled from his qualifying campaign, from our qualifying campaign, sorry. I'm intrigued to see how he did, because at the time, there was a lot of, he's got to go chat from a lot of people. So I'm just wondering how you see his job being done so far.
I think he gets a. Think, if you think back the circumstances he took over, it was almost an intolerable situation. It was an extremely difficult situation, and he got Welsh football out of a hole. Because can you imagine if things had gone wrong under Rob Page. They couldn't get Ryan Giggs back because of legal proceedings. Where would they have gone then? And he did qualify Wales for their first World Cup since 1958. I don't think you can forget that. Now, I get the form and I get everything else, but I still think he's the best positioned person to cope with the transition that he talked about after the World Cup, and which is inevitable with the retirement of Gareth Bale and whoever else. So, you know, he has a knowledge of the players. And I thought it was quite significant that for all the noise, as I called it, some of it generated from above him, I would say, in the autumn, those players responded big time against Croatia. So they showed, you know, there's no sense of that he's lost the dressing room. You know, you can have a go at his coaching career. You can say he didn't react quick enough against it. He was out-coached against Denmark in the Euros. And there have been other occasions as well. But overall, I still think he's probably the right man because I don't know where Wales would go after him. You know, you can talk Steve Cooper maybe, but why would Steve Cooper, with a possible Premier League job again? It's a bit early for him to even think about it. Rob Edwards of Luton. Not that it has to be a Welshman, but I'm just going through the regular people.
Yeah.
Thierry Henry, what has he done to sort of be even considered for this other than be on the Welsh coaching course? So I'm not saying a candidate would emerge, I'm sure. And Wales would probably still be a pretty attractive opposition, but certainly not as attractive as they were when Bale and Ramsey were in their prime.
I think when you look at what we've got in terms of the Republic of Ireland, I've just mentioned because the Chris Coleman links, I think you also can get stuck in a cycle of crap. And I don't mean that distastefully towards the managers themselves, just where you're searching for an answer where there probably isn't one. And when you're looking through people like Mick McCarthy and all sorts, you know, they're never, ever going to take you to the next level. You need to find the right person at the right time. And sometimes it'll work and sometimes it won't. But when you're in this cycle, like the Republic of Ireland, seemingly every year or 18 months, someone else is taking the helm. It creates a distortion underneath it and makes everything more complicated and more difficult. What do you think, Ruth?
I mean, his contract runs through the next World Cup. And I can't see things changing in that time frame, to be honest. I mean, if we go into these playoffs and we go out with a complete whimper, you know, if we lose 4-0 to Finland, having barely put our head above water, then there would be questions, clearly. But I think assuming that we're on the front foot in the playoffs and at least show what we're capable of, and then we go into the World Cup qualifying. And once you're into the World Cup qualifying, I mean, I realize it's a little ways off, but once you're into that qualifying, that sort of take the momentum kind of runs then, and you're going with that manager and his contract runs till then. So I can't see anything changing within the lifetime of his contract, to be honest, unless there's some sort of like major incident. And I think at that point, you've either got someone who's qualified you for your second World Cup, which is like puts him in a very different status, or it's been a mess, or it's been a mess, and you let his contract go, and you regroup and you restart. And I think that actually brings you a natural. I wasn't a fan of the length of his contract, but now that we're this deep in it, I think you just ride this out personally.
I agree, and I think what's hard as well here is that there's no argument that winning three games in a qualifying campaign isn't good enough, especially when you look at some of our opposition. But you know, like you said there, and Rob said, he's got us to a World Cup. He's the first person to do it, you know, through the qualifying process normally, and I don't think there can ever be enough credit in the bank for that. I think that's, you know, timeless as far as I'm concerned. So I think whilst he has got to make an improvement and make a change, I think he's got, as I say, in my mind, whilst I'm not a fan of everything, he's got enough credit in the bank for me, for sure, because of what he did and where he took us. So have you got any extra questions you would like to ask Ruth?
Well, I'd like to actually go back to that question that you got from someone on Twitter, Dave, and sort of Rob's opinion of like, where do you see us in 5 years' time, Rob? Not necessarily like the manager will be X or that sort of thing, but what would you like to see us being if we're down that line? Because we look at Finland, for example, and the way their trajectory is going, clearly we don't want that sort of pattern. What would you like to see us doing?
I go back to what Chris Coleman said when he was manager, that he wanted Wales to be competitive and qualifying regularly. That didn't mean every time. And we know what happened in the 2017 when Ireland ended Wales's World Cup hopes in the wake of what happened in Euro 2016. So I just like Wales to be competitive, occasionally punching above their weight. And qualifying, if not for every tournament, every other one, regular qualification countries, because Bale is a once in a generation talent. He got us through to Euro 2016, and we had Ramsey as well, which was just phenomenal, and a team that gelled. And since then, they've qualified with Bale, but now we're learning to cope with life without Bale. And if we can qualify just regularly, every other one maybe, I think that'll be fantastic.
I certainly will not be disappointed with that, as long as it starts the every other one with
Yeah,
the next summer roundup, because I really want to
yeah.
go to Germany this summer, I've got to be honest.
Yeah.
I mean, that comes back to a theme that we've talked about often, Dave, is wanting those last couple of games of qualifying campaigns to still be meaningful.
Yeah.
And we've touched on that a lot, that actually there are times when that would have been the hope, that the actual, that we're still in it in the qualifying campaigns. And I think if you can have that pattern, then 50-50, some of them are going to work out for you, some of them aren't. But I think if we can keep up this momentum where we go to a late on a Sunday evening in the CCS sometime deep in November and the game has some meaning, then when we're in a good place.
I think for
Yeah.
me, that's pretty much all I want, to be honest. Obviously, the qualifying part of it is amazing, but I think going into those games and them mattering is pretty much all you can want as a Wales fan. I mean, I've had years of tripe to watch, and I think we've been very lucky that we've been in that situation where they've kind of mattered a lot recently, and fantastic times it has given us. I'm very aware of the time, Rob. We've taken enough of your time, and we are very, very grateful for you for joining us. Thank you very much for spending your time
Enjoyed
with
it.
us.
I've had a
Thank you.
great time. I could talk Welsh football all day, as you know.
Thank you,
We'll
Rob.
get
We'll
you.
make have you back on, I'm sure, if you'd be willing
I was going to say,
soon.
just say the word. Just say the word.
Excellent. Well, you'll regret that, but thank you very much.
Nope,
We're very grateful for your time. Appreciate it. Thank you very much, Ruth, for your time.
nice, lovely. I love having guests on, but Rob is a particular pleasure.
Ah,
Absolutely.
thank you. Speak to you
Well, there you
soon,
go.
guys.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for listening, ladies and gents, and we will be back very soon. Goodbye.